report. Well, let me know if I'm talking loud enough for everyone to hear. Good evening, Dr. Horn and board members. I'm Patty Fuyumjun. Good timing. I'm going to cover a little updates on the drought as well to give you a little bit more information. And I have some recent meetings I wanted to report to you about. And then when I'm completed, I'm going to ask Lori Kemper to come up to the podium to give you an overview of our quarterly enforcement report. So she'll close the show this evening. Regarding the drought, the State Board is going to be hosting a workshop with DWR on Tuesday, April 29th, starting at 9 o'clock at Cal EPA. And if you, I got to go to one of their workshops on the drought, and I will tell you, they're very well attended, and it lasts a long time. So this will be a listening session to get input from stakeholders and others on how to streamline the water transfer process. So it should be a very interesting discussion, and I'm sure it'll go to late in the evening if any judge of how some of those other ones have gone. I also wanted the board to know of the previous workshops I've mentioned to you. The board has a state board has a very nice website up now, where they've got PowerPoint presentations from those. They have some videos of some of those past workshops. So if you're at all interested, that is a nice resource. That's available to all of us and to others who are interested in what's going on. I have a little bit of good news on following what Amy had mentioned on the water rights curtailment letters, which were imminent to be sent, which now, because we have a little extra water and a little bit better situation, they're putting those on hold for the moment, I'm told. So it's possible those come later, but for now, it's good news for folks. Many of the reservoirs are storing the extra water that they got from the last batch of storms, so that's good. And the board has been issuing, the state board, several temporary urgency changes for water diversions. This is to help out those impacted communities and agriculture areas that are struggling. I'll just mention a few that I know have received them recently. Rancho Murrieta, which is down in the Sacramento area, El Dorado Water District, and Willits are just three examples that have received those temporary urgency changes. The Bay Delta is also ever-changing. As Amy pointed out, they were going to put the berries in, now they're not. But the staff are monitoring this very closely in Sacramento. This is a real delicate balance between, the Delta outflows that they've allowed for increases and keeping the salinity back from the ocean, keeping enough water in for the fisheries. It seems to be a regular check, and they work very closely with DWR at those pumps down south to kind of keep that balanced. So it'll be a busy summer, no doubt, for the water rights staff. The state board staff are also working on an expedited general permit for recycled water. I think you had heard about that. I mentioned that previously. It's for the use on agricultural lands. And they'll make it consistent with the DPH Title 22 regs, meaning protection of public health, where they use those and what kind of crops they can use those on. Our staff are looped into this process, I'm happy to report. They sent us the latest draft. We're still looking at it right now, and we'll be giving comments up to the state board. It doesn't look so bad, though, our report. I did kind of scan through the pages. It does give some authority to the regional board to make decisions, so wanted you to know that. I'm now going to switch gears to something a bit more explosive. You probably have all seen the news about Lake Tahoe and the fireworks and all that's been going on that. good news, we'll be getting our beloved fireworks event after all at Lake Tahoe. I know the community, this is very important to the community on all sides of the discussion. The lawsuit has been resolved, and the parties have reached some agreements. The Tahoe Business Bureau will improve their management and debris removal at the location of where the fireworks are being shot on the barge, and the fire department will be issuing a permit, again, to help ensure that debris is removed and properly managed. As a reminder, this very popular pyrotechnic display is on the Nevada side of the lake by a little bit of 3 feet only, which is good for us. So I mentioned that. Neither California nor Nevada have permitted this event over the years. We have looked at it. We've not received applications for it in Nevada because the barge is on the Nevada side of the lake, has written a letter indicating they have no intention of permitting it. Years ago, we did test the area around the fireworks display, and we found some elevated levels of perchlorate for a period of time. The next day, it was gone. The primary issue, it seems, even people are debating on this, is really the debris that settles at the lake bottom and the waste that washes to the shore seems to be the bigger concern of the community on those. But this debate has raised a lot of interesting policy questions for us as well, and we've been spending lots of hours going back and forth on this and what should we do. To mention that we do have other fireworks displayed a bit much smaller on the California side of the lake, at Camp Rich on the north side and a couple other spots, but they're not nearly the volume or size of that big show over on the Nevada side. So far, only San Diego is the only region board that does have an actual NPDES permit for fireworks, but they have daily fireworks displays from SeaWorld, so it's a bit more in terms of volume, and they use a larger volume of explosives. There's a similar concern, just so you know, over Disneyland for their pyrotechnic display, but since there's no water bodies there, it's mostly air quality that they're concerned about. So these daily fireworks displays people have been concerned of historically. The San Diego permit does have some really good things in it. It has elements of debris management, monitoring, reporting the use of the pyrotechs in terms of volume and how much, and encouraging less toxic alternatives. So no other region has issued NPS permits that we know of for fireworks displays over lakes or rivers. And there are an awful lot, as we know, fireworks displays over rivers and lakes throughout California, very popular from a patriotic standpoint. But this issue could be a good candidate for a statewide general permit that could maybe spell out some of these practical BMPs like they've done in San Diego, rather than issue individual permits for annual fireworks displays at individual lakes and rivers. So I'll be sharing that with the state board staff and have talked to them a little bit about it already. They're looking for, as they call it, a stable of general permits for easy ones to do. You might recall we did one for the Woodford's salinity pond there that we're using, recycling. I sent that up to the state board as a sample of a potential statewide permit because they could use it in different places. So this, again, might be an example of something they could take statewide. I wanted to mention a bunch of meetings that we've had. We've been very productive with a series of meetings and discussions with people. One, I held a meeting with some of the three Lake Tahoe agencies that are implementing the Tahoe TM, Stormwater TMDL, just recently on April 3rd. This is the City of South Lake Tahoe, El Dorado, and Placer County. And many of our staff, and Mr. Larson, helped us run this meeting as well. And we talked about a number of issues about how we can improve the permit implementation in other areas. It's also where we confirmed with them that we accepted their 3 stormwater management plans and let them know about that. They actually did a very good job on those plans. I believe it's important that we start having more of these kind of collaboration meetings with them on a regular basis to check in where we are, you know, where are we having problems, where are things working, where are things not working. Better that we have these discussions now than when the permit renewal at the last minute. So this, I think, is going to become a regular event that we're going to do. We did a little bit last year of that as well. However, I did want to mention one part of the plan. I did ask all 3 jurisdictions to revise the reports and return them to me by July 15th. And so this meeting was a part to tell them I was going to send them that letter to let them know that they need to make revisions to their plans. The financial analysis section of each plan needed to be provided more detail on how they will secure the needed resources to meet future permit requirements. In general, the jurisdictions provided compliance cost estimates that exceeded the available money they had. Yet none of the plans described actions that the co-committees will take to address the revenue shortfalls. It's never easy, I know, for local governments to look at their new revenue sources because it's very politically challenging to take that on. But it's a fact that the federal grant funding that we've all benefited from in this basin is going away. And so the success of the implementation of the TMDL means people have to step up to the plate and take some responsibility and figure out where we could find money for the out years. And I'd rather have this dialogue now, early and often, than in a couple of years when it comes before this board, and they have no way of funding implementation of the TMDL. So I just want to let you know that we're working with them. I know the resources are stretched thin. I know this is not easy for them, but we got to start talking about it. So that's, I wanted to let you know we sent that letter out recently. In case you get any happy phone calls from supervisors or anything. Forestry, and Barry left us here, but on March 19th, I had a meeting with Barney Gant.
I said he'll be back tomorrow.
Yes, he will be back tomorrow. I was going to give him a plug. On March 19th, I met with Barney Gant, who's the regional deputy forester, and Diane Craig, who is their deputy for ecosystems, and Barry came as well, and our own staff. We had a similar meeting last year. I thought that was very productive, where we talked about areas where we had disagreement, where we could have commonality, and where we could help each other out. And out of that came, I don't know if you recall, the joint CEQA NEPA training that we did with them, which went very well. And I think they're taking the show on the road to Region 5 next, because that went well. And our own Kim helped give a big part of that presentation last year. And, you know, again, I hope to have this as a regular event, and both parties agreed it was a good discussion. We covered a lot of ground. We talked about where we have marijuana problems in the forest in our area, so we did collaborate on that, and they're going to give us some resources to get more information. We talked again about the joint CEQA NEPA training and projects and that we need to do better in this area. We talked about the cattle grazing statewide policy, and we actually, on the heels of what Barry talked to you about earlier in terms of, wouldn't it be nice if we had some regulatory approach for all the things with the Forest Service? Well, good news to report that we actually talked about maybe doing a general WDR for our region. I'm not so sure the State Board is going to proceed with their statewide policy for all of the areas. In fact, I've been told they won't do that. But it doesn't mean our region can't proceed with that with a general WDR. And to work collaboratively. Heck, they even offered to give us a PY to help us do it. So we're going to continue that dialogue and that discussion with them. And, of course, we talked about the draft timber waiver quite a bit, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. So it was a good discussion. In fact, they even talked about, we talked about them coming up again this summer to look at implementation of the timber waiver that the board might consider adopting tomorrow to see how it actually works in practice in the field. How's it going? We also had another meeting, a successful meeting Laura and I did, with Stuart Black, who's the deputy director at Toxics. He's attempting to go out to all the regions and meet with the EOs to kind of find out how we can collaborate better with Toxics. Stuart heads up the cleanup programs for Toxics, the Superfund, the permitted sites, and all the DOD sites. So we talked about how we can collaborate better on DOD sites. We actually swapped ideas how to be more efficient, and so it was a good discussion. We also talked about the Duke Commons groundwater plume, which Toxics is the lead on, and how we could perhaps take on a bigger leadership role in that and how we can work with them on that. It's one of our priors on our priority list.
Where is that?
The Duke Commons facility is
Elmer
Valley, yeah.
Elmer Mirage.
Yeah, area. We talked about managed natural attenuation and how they too are having constraints with federal agencies that are pushing it quite a bit, in their opinion, as is some of ours, maybe more than they should in certain spots. So we talked about their new, he called their Sprocket program. It's where they have their GIS database. They have a database called EnviroStore where they have all of their facilities. and all their documents up. They're trying to gather other state agency databases that have a GIS base and link them all together to look at data. And I think the concept that they're looking at is to try to identify where they see pollution problems and then look on their map and see, gee, where are the facilities that might cause it? Or, interestingly, where are there not facilities? So maybe it's an illegal site or an abandoned site from long ago. So they, Stuart promised to get back to us in the summer. He said he was going to do a computer run for our region and give us that list or that data that may tell us where we have illegal dump sites that we didn't know about before. So that's kind of interesting. And so we're going to continue collaborating with Stuart, and he's going to come back up again in the summer and share his computer runs with us and what he's found in our region. Nearshore. On March 28th, our staff met with Cindy Gustafson with Tahoe City PUD and Richard Solberg on South Lake Tahoe PUD, and we talked about nearshore pollution and potential causes. We wanted to collaborate with the sewer agencies on where they saw potential problems in terms of contributors to nearshore pollution, be that condos, be that leaking pipes, laterals, other things. So it was a real good discussion about what do they know, what, how can we work better. We shared information with them about our nearshore data and what we had found. They were going to go back and look at their maps and look at their areas. And it, I think it's a good dialogue. We still need to have discussion with Paul, who with North Tahoe PUD as well, Paul Schultz on his. But I think we started a discussion and a dialogue. Our staffs will be working together on the near shore. And this will be important as we figure out where areas we need to focus on for causal assessments. So that was a good discussion that we had with those folks. I also want to mention that on the 16th, or next week, we're heading down to Bishop. There, through our swamp program, we have found some high levels of bacteria readings in Bishop Creek in Inyo County down there. And Mike Plasiak has been working very closely with Tom Sook and with the Environmental Health Director, and I think his name is it Mark Moskowitz?
Marvin
Moskowitz, thank you very much, about what the causes are. They're looking at data, and there'll be sort of a public workshop next week on that. Some of us will be heading down to that to kind of share information about what we've learned and what can we do about it. And so you'll hear probably more about that at our Bishop meeting in June. Which gives me a good toggling switch over to our Bishop meeting in June. I just want to alert the board members that we're going to be doing a tour of the as part of the board meeting on the Wednesday. The tour will start around roughly around 1 o'clock, and our gracious host, Mr. Mark Drew with Caltrout, is proposing to take the board members, staff, and the Irwin summit participants in the morning. He's having a summit. I'll tell you about that a little bit later. To some disadvantaged communities to look at their water systems in the Owens Valley, where they're struggling. The tour will give us a better picture of what they're facing down there and allow us to interact with the board members who wish to go, interact with the tribes and some of the community members, and to share ideas and concerns that they're facing down there. Some of they're still in the planning stages, but they're thinking of maybe looking at the Big Pine CSD, the Big Pine tribal lands, and what their issues are, and potentially maybe the Bishop Paiute tribe if time and travel permits. They're also hosting, or at least Mark Drew is, I just mentioned this in case if you're interested and you decide to travel early on Wednesday to this session, is that they're hosting, I think, a very informative and interesting summit in the morning. From the, they got a DWR grant for almost $496,000 to look, from the Irwin process, to look at the disadvantaged communities and tribal engagement in regional water planning processes. There's been a lot of criticism of the DWR Irwin program of not being as accommodating to EJ groups as they could be. So I think DWR is trying to improve how they're running their Irwin process. This grant is going to be have several categories. It'll be identifying pressing needs of these communities in rural areas, developing strategies to how to empower them, how to get them involved in the process of DWR. The first half of the day-long summit, Mark Drew is going to roll out the results and the findings of this grant, because they've been doing exploring and interviews and discussions with various people to kind of gather information. He's going to show a 25-minute documentary film produced as part of this grant, which should be very interesting. And he's going to follow up with a discussion round table with the community, the tribes, the district and communities about water planning and how we can improve our efforts. So, again, I'm just mentioning, too, we'll send out something to the board members. If any of you are interested in attending either the morning session on the summit or just the afternoon session on the tour, Sue will be following up with you on that. I ask because if we have more than three board members, we have to publicly notice it. So that's what we're trying to gauge your interest. So we'll send you more information. These are the issues I just wanted to cover this evening. And I don't know if you have any questions about any of those issues. If not, I'll have Lori come up and do her part of the presentation. No?
Mr. Sandell is ready diligently.
No, that's something I need to do, but not about this. But
well, thank you. I'm going to ask Lori Kemper to come up and talk to you about the enforcement.
Good evening, Chair, and members of the board. I'm Lori Kemper, and in your packet in the EO report item 5, starting on page 5-25, is the Court of the Violations report, and we have a summary of the violations as well as Scott Ferguson provided a summary of violations and enforcement actions for the entire year of 2013. This report that you have has the quarter, which was the last quarter in 2013, November, December. It's interesting because typically that time period usually has a lot of construction-related violations associated with construction season that in the Tahoe Basin in Truckee that ends around October 15th, which usually comes with a rainstorm or two and some discharges. This fall that didn't happen, so we actually only have a couple of violations on Caltrans related to a couple of their projects for failure to implement BMPs, you know, in preparation for the winter, but we didn't have any actual water quality violations. We had 140 violations in the fourth quarter, which was a lot more than the previous quarter, which was only 38 violations. That's primarily due to a number of flow-related violations that trigger, you know, almost like monthly or daily violations in some cases. But we have Oak Tree Inn, Death Valley National Park, two sites at Death Valley, the Furnace Creek Wastewater Treatment Facility and the Stovepipe Wells. And interestingly enough, those flow violations did relate to a pretty high visitor usage this last year, partly because of, I think, the extremely high temperatures. You know, people wanted to be there for some of that, and for I'm not sure why else, but there was a lot of use and a lot of water use and that kind of that was over their capacity of their wastewater system, but we don't believe there's any water quality violations associated with that, so we've been meeting with them, and staff is planning inspections out there. It's already been completed those. And the Oak Tree one you've seen before, Oak Tree Inn, they had initially, we thought they had flow meter problems, and they replaced that flow meter, and now they're still showing flow violations. So we've asked them for additional information and a revised report of waste discharge, and we might be considering changes to their permit to essentially accommodate more flow, but they may need to increase their treatment capacity as well. So we're evaluating that for that. And then, most importantly, the Class 1 or high priority violations during the fourth quarter. Those there's just 9 of them, and they're at the top of the page. Well, they cover page 5-28 and 5-29. And most of these are sites you've kind of heard about in the past. Arrow Mall, that they're working with us, but they have had a couple of violations in terms of starting, and this was in the fall. They actually did complete their initial restoration, but they were late. They just got started late. They finished late, and again, luckily, there wasn't weather that really impeded their ability to complete it before the winter. We're still working with them to comply with the remainder of their cleanup and abatement order, looking for off-site restoration, still negotiating mitigation ratios and what they need to do for the for the remaining mitigation for their impacts. And then the city of Barstow, we've been working closely with them. They have nitrate pollution across the river from their wastewater treatment plant, and they have designed a nitrate remediation system. They're still, of course, violating the groundwater objectives there. We had, I would say, Mike Plasiak and his staff met with the city last month to talk about the design, but also to talk about it appears to be the impending perchlorate, which is upgrading of the nitrate pollution, and the city of Barstow's willingness to maybe partner with us and try to get some state board funding from the cleanup and abatement account to try to deal with the perchlorate problem at the same time they're dealing with the nitrate, or try to figure out the best strategies. So they've hired some new consultants that are reevaluating some of the data and modeling that have been done previously to more accurately understand what's going on in terms of how their remediation system may pull perchlorate toward them. So that's ongoing discussions there, and we are in communication with the State Water Board too, related to getting cleanup and abatement account monies to assist in that area. We still have two people with high perchlorate that are getting bottled water through the cleanup and abatement account funds, and we just had that that contract renewed. Well, the contract hasn't been renewed, but the money got authorized from State Board to continue the bottled water, which was going to expire this month from the previous authorization. And then just this week, we received some new information about another well that has 240 parts per million perchlorate. So we are investigating that, and that may be another person that will require bottled water. So. And then the other high-priority violations that are being addressed, the next one is the Spalding Track property owner, and we're going through our sort of progressive discipline approach with them in terms of notice of violation, if they, giving them a chance to hook up, and if they don't, then proceed with the cease and desist order that we'll be bringing back to the board in the fall. And then N&M Dairy, there's still ongoing violations associated with the contaminated groundwater. They're still under orders to provide bottled water. Those will continue to show up in the violation report that the dairy is no longer operating. And Lake Arrowhead CSD had a spill related to a faulty valve that they were replacing. And then a landfill at Edwards. So those were considered the high priority violations. And then just summarizing for the year 2013, that's back on page 5-26, we had entered a total of 625 violations into our system for the 2013 calendar year, and that compares to 885 violations from the previous calendar year, 2012. Of the 50 Class 1 violations, we had 50 Class 1, those are the priority ones. We were able to act on most of those, and then we, in total, in terms of the 625 violations, we have addressed about half of those, 329. We did that through informal enforcement action. So this, again, is kind of the board's direction from the various enforcement discussions we've been having, of really trying to achieve compliance by talking to folks and maybe giving them notices of violation. And then that's how that's been going on. And then we've also had, we issued a total of 132 enforcement actions. Scott wanted to point out also that some of the violations that don't appear to be addressed are actually being addressed through Title 27 permits. So our landfill permits and our mining permits incorporate leak detection and response to any kind of leak detection. So sometimes there's violations that are actually being addressed because they immediately provide corrective action plans. And that would be similar to, say, PG&E to answer their violations. There doesn't have to be an enforcement action in order to get them back into compliance. So we don't necessarily take an actual action in those situations. So, do you have any questions?
This report is great.
Thank you.
Let's have one of these every year. Nice little summary.
Yeah.